Where would they be on?
That's at the Quiet Night. There's probably somebody
that's at
else.
The Quiet Night, isn't it, right?
So, we have with us tonight, today, Alexis Kerner.
Oh, proper pronunciation.
Quite renowned in England and a bit here in the States.
Well, that I'm slightly surprised by, but...
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, what brings you to the States?
Well, I'm over here basically doing a promotion tour for the album, purely an FM promotion tour. I'm not playing. I had a blow with some friends in Cleveland the other night, but I mean, apart from that, I'm not actually here playing. I'm here promoting myself.
Get Off My Cloud is the album.
Right. With one or two friends on it, basically. It's, I had to get it together fast because I always leave it till the last moment.
Uh-huh.
So I got them to help me out.
How many albums does that make that you put out?
Well, we tried to work it out the other day. I think 17 in my own name over the years. And I've done bits and pieces on a lot of other people's albums.
Exactly how many years is that you've been
recording? First, I think the first time that I came out on a recording of any sort was 1951 or 52. I was working in a backing group with a couple of friends. No, it must have been later than that. It must have been 53. With a couple of friends backing a girl singer called Beryl Bryden, who's never done anything enormous, but she's been around a long time. And then I was working with jazz bands at the time a lot anyway, because I've always worked with jazz bands. Earlier on anyway, I came up in traditional jazz bands, playing the blues sets in the bands, you know. Then I worked with Ken Collier, who was one of the top New Orleans revivalist bands in Britain for a time, and recorded with him. And I made the first record in my own name, I think, in about 1956. 56, 57, that was the first time. Thank you very much. That's the first time I recorded in my own name. And that was a couple of EPs.
Uh-huh.
And first album in my name was 1961, I think. That was the first album, actually. And I've been sort of releasing fairly regularly in Europe ever since. One a year, on an average, sometimes two in a year. I also work with a big band called CCS.
Yeah.
Which did one or two odd things, and I made three albums with them. All round, it must be albums that I was, shall we say, a principal in or involved in, other than purely working as a backing musician. It must be between 17 and 20.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of albums now.
Sure.
Well, you know, my wife's always said I make far too many albums.
How do you feel about the new one?
I like the new one. It's a terrible thing because everyone says I like my latest album. Yeah. I don't usually say that, actually.
It's a little different.
Yeah, that's why I like it, because it's a much wider range. It's the sort of range I always wanted to play, but it was very difficult to get the musicians to do it all.
Uh-huh.
Because they used to be a bit uptight. Since I worked very much with jazz players, they were very much into R&B, but they weren't into rock and roll. And they used to get very uptight if I suggested doing rock and roll songs, and this album gave me a chance actually to do rock and roll songs, which I like doing.
Uh-huh.
And popular black music as opposed to straight blues or straight R&B.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I dig about it, really.
How did you choose to do Get Off My Cloud?
There's a Stones song I've always liked, and which very few people have ever covered. And
I don't think anybody has.
I heard an Aerosmith version the other day. As it happens on the car radio yesterday. No, it's not been covered much. And I always thought it was a good song. And George Caldwell, who produced the album, also dug it very much. And so we decided that we'd do Get Off My Cloud because we enjoyed doing it. And I like the version on the album very much. In fact, we said to Keith at the time, hey, that's a nice riff, and he said, yeah, I wish I'd thought of that in 1965. So they're doing Get Off My Cloud again now.
Yeah.
And they haven't done it for a couple of years. Strange.
Never mind. There's also a Doors tune on there.
Yes, there is. There's Texas Radio and the Big Beat. That is a piece of grand kitsch as far as I'm concerned. It's super kitsch. Uh-huh. It's real radio. You know, it's everything. It's a sort of crystallization of radio with humor as far as I'm concerned. You know, I enjoyed doing it, but I would never do that live because it depends very much on timing and it also depends very much on the mood I'm in. And I certainly couldn't guarantee to be in the right mood to do that every night. Mm-hmm. So it's something that is purely a recording thing as far as I'm concerned, rather than even possibly a live performance. You know, but I enjoyed doing it very much.
It's quite a quote on the cover too from Pete Townsend.
Oh yeah, it's all very embarrassing that actually. When he said it, we got scared that Keith Moon and Viv Stancil and one or two other people were going to show up with a sedan chair.
Yeah.
In the middle of, because if they did so, they'd show up at 4 o'clock in the morning or something in the pouring rain and insist on putting me in it and carrying me around. So I hope they wouldn't take Pete up on it. Unfortunately, they didn't. Although one day when the car was in the garage, we nearly rang him up and said, look, we need transport. What about this sedan chair? And then we thought better of it at the last minute and left it. But I spoke to Pete a few weeks ago.
What about your early involvement with the Rolling Stones?
Well, it was very simply that Mick was one of the band singers, and Charlie I'd known a couple of years before that anyway. We used to blow together in a club in London. And Brian Jones was a personal friend of mine from Cheltenham. And Keith and Mick always came up together anyway, and they used to sit around the kitchen and talk. Mick worked with the band. Keith occasionally blew with our band. Brian Jones occasionally sat in with the band, and Charlie was our regular drummer anyway. So everyone sort of got together. It was the first band in the country, and everyone was bound to go through it, mm-hmm. if they were interested. 61, mm-hmm. 60, 61. It was the beginning of the whole changeover from trad jazz being the occasional hit maker other than the normal schmaltzy stuff.
Uh-huh.
that made the charts in Britain.
Skiffle was still around.
Skiffle was still around, just... we were out to destroy all that, tell you the truth. It was a deliberate act of destruction because we got tired of all those forms of music. They were not really getting anywhere. And we deliberately wanted to change the scene. And because it was the right time and the right place, it worked. That's really what it boils down to, you know.
Uh-huh.
But it was nice being in the right time and the right place. It was very exciting. It was gas, in fact.
Who were some of the people you were listening to at that time?
Well, I was listening to black music, as I always do, basically. We were lucky, you see, because when the first bluesmen started to come over to England in the early 50s, Bill Brunsey was the first ever that I met. But when the others started to come over, I mean, Memphis Slim came over and Jack Dupree came over and Speckled Red... Sonny and Brownie, Roosevelt Sykes, Muddy, Otis Spann, everyone was coming over bit by bit. And I always worked with them because there weren't any other blues guitar players around in London particularly or anywhere else. That, you know, and the result was I came up learning from these cats as opposed to learning everything secondhand. And so I listened to them a hell of a lot, but at the same time I was listening to Mingus and Bird and King Oliver and Louis and everyone. I just like music that turns me on, and it doesn't have to be a particular type of music. Some music occasionally works on me and some doesn't. So, I mean, it's really a matter of listening to a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I always did. And I just listen to more and more as I get older because my ears get bigger. That's all, really. So it gets more confusing. So you get an album like this, because the more I hear, the more things I want to do.
Uh-huh.
Now that really is. Basically, I was listening to blues more than anything else. Then into what we consider to be traditional classic blues forms. But I mean, even in our first band, we used to mix Mingus and Bird up with Muddy Waters. Because it was all the same music as far as we were concerned. It had a common feel. And anything that felt right, we played.
Uh-huh.
irrespective of whether it was supposed to be blues or not. And I've worked that way for a long time now. It's why I don't like to work with one regular band, because I miss too many people I could be blowing with. And I don't want to miss that, because I've only got a certain amount of time, and there are a lot of cats who I'll never get round to playing with, and so I want to play with as many different people as I can while I'm around. Physically, I mean, you know, it's just that you can't cram more than a certain amount of people into one lifetime. And I'd like to get in as many blows with as many different people as I can while I'm around.
I've played with quite a few already.
Yes, I've been lucky that way. Inconstant, but very lucky.
Klaus Stildinger, you've played with him?
Yes, Klaus and I are quite good friends. In fact, I saw Klaus only a matter of 2-3 weeks ago, because... No, actually, it's more than that, because I've been here nearly a month. 5 weeks ago, because I've just done a German tour before I came over here. I did 5 weeks in Germany, and I saw Klaus in Munich, which was the last but one gig, so it must have been about this time last month. Uh-huh. Hell, no, I came here 23rd, finished 17th in Germany. 15th of June I saw Klaus. 15th of May I saw Klaus. And I also, as it happens, on the plane from New York to Boston, I ran into Fritz Rau, who is one of the biggest promoters in Germany and promotes all the Stone stuff. And last year we did an all-star tour with Klaus, and he wants to do another one this year, and we were talking about the possibilities of it on the plane on the way up.
Brian Auger?
That's right, with Brian and Pete York and Johnny Griffin and
yeah.
And a very fine German guitar player called Volker Kriegel.
Oh, yeah.
And me. I dug that. A lot of problems, because you invite 5 band leaders as guests and you're asking for trouble. You really are. But we kept it more or less cool until the end of the tour.
Who are some of the other people that you've played
with? That I've played with? Well, the drummer who replaced Charlie was Ginger. Jack Bruce was already our bass player. He came in on bass in the band within about 3 weeks. So we had a rhythm section of Jack Bruce and Ginger Baker. And when Cyril Davis, the harmonica player with whom I started the band, and I split over saxophones because he didn't like horns, Graham Bond came in to replace him. So we had 2 horns. We had Hexel Smith and Graham Bond. Jack and Ginger as bass and drums, a very good piano player, boogie and blues piano player, who used to work with Humphrey Littleton's band called Johnny Parker, singer off one of the USAF basses called Ronnie Jones, and me, that was one band. Lots of people. Paul Jones used to come and sing and play. Eric Burden used to come down from Newcastle on a weekend and blow. Manfred Mann used to be around all the time. Robert Plant, Zoot Money, and a lot of people.
Just incredible how many bands have evolved out of all those people that have played with you.
Yeah, well, I'm very pleased. That was my kick, really, was getting people going. It's a gas. It's very exciting working with young players who are just beginning to get moving, because all sorts of very strange things happen musically, which wouldn't happen to me if it weren't for the fact that I was playing with cats who are not so set, and who therefore force me to keep loose. So it's a good way to work. I always dig working with people who are still very excited by music, which I am. But a lot of my generation is not so excited by it anymore, and I find it more boring playing with them. I like simply playing with people who are excited at the thought of playing. That's usually younger musicians.